Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th canto, 3rd chapter, text 15. Before we begin, the verse was too long, so it wasn't written up on the board. And I prepared for the class, and problem was I was off by one chapter. I prepared 5-2, 15. So that's what happens when you don't show up at the beginning. I think we'll give it a go, and I might need a little bit of help on this one because I haven't even... I'm reading the translation of the purport right now for the very first time, so... Everybody, please listen carefully because this might be a class where a lot of audience participation is required, okay? So I won't even try to read the Sanskrit. It's in prose form. Should I do the word for word? Okay, good. All right, so here we go. This is the translation to 5:315. O Lord, you perform many wonderful activities. Our only aim was to acquire a son by performing this great sacrifice. Therefore, our intelligence is not very sharp. We are not experienced in ascertaining life's goal. By inviting you to this negligible sacrifice for some material motive, we have certainly committed a great offense at your lotus feet. Therefore, O Lord of Lords, please excuse our offense because of your causeless mercy and equal mind. Purport. The priests were certainly unhappy to have called the Supreme Lord from Vaikuntha for such an insignificant reason. A pure devotee never wants to see the Lord unnecessarily. The Lord is engaged in various activities, and the pure devotee does not want to see him whimsically for his own sense gratification. The pure devotee simply depends on the Lord's mercy, and when the Lord is pleased, he can see him face to face. The Lord is unseen even by demigods like Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva. By calling on the Supreme Lord, the priests of Nabi Maharaj proved themselves unintelligent. Nonetheless, the Lord came out of his causeless mercy. All of them therefore wanted to be excused by the Lord. Worship of the Lord for material gain is not approved by authorities, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7, text 16. Chatur vidha bhajante mam jnana sukritin arjuna. Arto gigyasur artarti gyani cha bharatarshava. O best among the bharats, Arjuna, four kinds of pious men render devotional service unto me: the distressed, the desire of wealth, the inquisitive, and he who is searching for knowledge of the Absolute. Initiation into bhakti begins when one is in a distressed condition or in want of money, or when one is inquisitive to understand the Absolute Truth. Nonetheless, people who approach the Supreme Lord in this way are not actually devotees. They are accepted as pious, sukritina, due to their inquiring about the Absolute Truth, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Not knowing the various activities and engagements of the Lord, such people unnecessarily disturb the Lord for material gain. However, the Lord is so kind that even though disturbed, he fulfills the desires of such beggars. The pure devotee is anyabhilasita sunya. He has no motive behind his worship. He is not conducted by the influence of maya in the form of karma or jnana. The pure devotee is always prepared to execute the order of the Lord without personal consideration. The word ritvija, the priest at the sacrifice, knew very well the distinction between karma and bhakti. And because they considered themselves under the influence of karma, fruit of activity, they begged the Lord's pardon. They knew that the Lord had been invited to come for some paltry reason. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pastaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminita Namane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gaudavani Pacharine Nivashesha Sanyavadi Pastajadi Shacharine Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhuna Chananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasudevi Gaudavani Bhaktivrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Well, first thing that comes to my mind is that you know, we learn from Lord Chaitanya how to properly pray to Krishna. He gives us that in his Shashastakam prayers, is that prayer, Nadalam na janam na sundarim kavitam bhaja garisha kamaye mama janmani janmanishvare babatad bhaktir hoitaki twai. That he's praying, oh my Lord, I have no desire to accumulate wealth, nor to do enjoy beautiful women, nor have any number of followers. I only want your causeless devotional service, birth after birth. And so that should be, that's the standard. That's, you know, that's our model. That should be what we're striving for, to come to that consciousness where that's the only thing we're desiring from Krishna, pure devotional service. You know? And not to be praying to Krishna for anything else. My mind really doesn't work that fast. I'm sorry. I'm one of these guys who really has to sit with the purport for quite a bit before I can come up with some thoughts. Okay, well, of course, if we're one safe thing we could do, even if we, you know, if we're not in spontaneously in that platform where we're able to pray for pure devotional service, you know, if it's not what, you know, the thing that's springing from our heart, at least if we're just able to follow the instructions of the spiritual master, you know, that's purifying. That's progress. That's moving us in that direction of when we will actually be able, be fortunate enough to feel that spontaneous, you know, desire that we just want to, you know, that we just want devotional service and nothing material. You know, that's actually that's the significance behind performing sadhana bhakti. See, we're not on the stage of raganuga bhakti. At least I'm not. I know maybe some of the exalted devotees here are, and I wouldn't doubt that, but I'm not. So, therefore, Prabhupada and the Acharyas have given us sadhana bhakti. Sadhana means you just practice, and eventually it starts happening, because as Bhadra Narayan mentioned in class, one of the classes he gave in the last few days, that pure love for Krishna is lying dormant within the heart of every living entity. Nitya Siddha Krishna Premasabhi Kabanaya Shravanade Sudichate Koryodai. That, and it just has to be awakened. You know, it's there and it has to be awakened, and the process for awakening that is sadhana bhakti, shravana disudhi chitti koruda, that hearing, by hearing about Krishna and by chanting about Krishna, that dormant love for Krishna becomes revived, it becomes reawakened. So even if we're not, you know, on that platform where we're able to just, we're just desiring devotional service, by at least intelligently making that decision that we're going to engage in sadhana bhakti, gradually that will be awakened. You know, just like an example that just comes to my mind is just like if you have a car that has a standard transmission, you know, a clutch, and your battery might be all, you know, just about dead. If it's completely dead, then it doesn't, you know, won't work. But if it's just kind of on the dead side, but not totally dead, and you can't start it, it's not enough to turn over. But if you put it into second gear, and then you get a couple people behind the car to, you know, just, well, you put it into second gear, and you push in the, you engage the clutch, you push the clutch down, right? And then you get some people to push you, And when you get up to about 5 miles an hour, or between 5 and 10 miles an hour, you just gradually release the clutch, and the thing goes, and it just kind of kicks in, and you're off. It starts up. It's called the jump start. So it's kind of like that. You know, engaging in sadhana bhakti is kind of like that. It's like jump starting the motor, so to speak. You know, jump starting the heart. You just start doing it. You just start going along as if you were going to go, and then it just kind of kicks in. So that's the idea. That's what's supposed to happen. Because it is natural. It's Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema. It's in the heart of every living entity. Devotionals to love Krishna is what's natural. And if we just practice, even, you know, we just go through the motions. There's one expression in the material world: fake it till you make it. So, you know, we just kind of do it, perform the activities of somebody who's loving Krishna, and because it is the real natural, you know, what's supposed to happen is that we love Krishna, then it just kind of kicks in at some point, just like with the car. It's supposed to run, and if you kind of give it half a chance by jump-starting it like that, then it just starts happening. So that's, that's, you know, what's a blessing that we receive from from the predecessor acharyas, this opportunity to be somehow or another be engaged in devotional service, even though, like, we're really not on that level of consciousness. Like, for instance, when we're chanting Hare Krishna, we're chanting, "Oh my Lord, please engage me in your service." Prabhupada said it's like a cry from the child, you know, to the mother, a sincere cry from the child to the mother for service. But, quite often we're not actually feeling that. I mean, it's one thing to be, the point I'm making is, like, it's one thing to be performing the activities, and it's another thing to be really feeling, you know, the bhakti like that, or that desire. So, that might not be there, but that's okay. Just by the chanting is purifying. The chanting is non-different from Krishna. When we're chanting Hare Krishna, we're associating with Krishna. So by chanting, the consciousness becoming purified, and gradually we're progressing. You know, we're making progress towards that stage where we will be, you know, genuinely feeling those spiritual emotions, which are the real emotions, which are the natural emotions for the soul, for the living entity. And Lord Chaitanya prays also was that when he goes, "Oh my Lord, when will my eyes be decorated with Ayinanda?" No, that's Nayanam Galadashudalaya Vadanam Gadagada Vidayagana Pulakaya Nichitam Bapukada Tabanama Grahane Vishti. When will my eyes be decorated with tears of love flowing constantly when I chant your holy name? When will my voice choke up? And when will the hairs of my body stand on end at the recitation of your name? So in other words, it's something to be desired. It's not like that's a bad thing. We should want to advance and come to that stage where we're really feeling that, you know, some love for Krishna. I mean, that's my understanding of that verse. He's desiring that. He's expressing that. When will my eyes be decorated with tears of love? Constantly when I chant your holy name, when will my voice choke up, and when will the hairs of my body stand on at the recitation of your name? So that's not a bad thing. That's not a material desire to want to advance in devotional service and progress and come to the stage where we're experiencing those things. Of course, the devotee is not selfish. It's not like we're only concerned with, you know, me and what I'm experiencing. Well, a genuine pure devotee is more concerned with his heart's, we heard from Bhajra Narayan over the last year, his heart's filled with compassion. And it's not actually, very high on his, like, list of priorities that I should experience love of God. He's more concerned with other people. I quoted that verse from Prahlad Maharaj, which the Sanskrit I don't know, you know, the verse where he's praying that I'm not concerned for myself, I'm just concerned for these poor fools and rascals. They're engaged in all this maya sukaya, this, you know, pointless material activity, and in this way they're wasting their lives, so I'm concerned with them with love, I think he says in that verse. So that's the higher stage of devotional service. And And I think that, you know, that also develops as will come automatically. It's not artificially that one has to try to induce that. That comes as one's heart becomes purified and one advances in devotional service. And once again, there's another point. So this is, you know, reflecting on the how perfect and how genius our spiritual master and acharyas were, because just like I was making that point about, well, you know, we don't feel the love for Krishna, but we've been given a program so that if we just plug into that program, we just do those things, you know, it's like chant Hare Krishna, come to Mangalarti, attend Srimad Bhagavatam class, study Prabhupada's books, etc., then it develops. So in the same way, we've been, sadhana bhakti, so we've kind of been given like sadhana preaching too. We've been given, the acharyas had such foresight that they gave us a program that, you know, if we just do the program, everything will develop. And like Lord Chaitanya, he gave the instruction, yade deke tade kaha Krishna upadesh, amana agaya guru hana tada edesh, that wherever you go, whoever you meet, instruct them about what Krishna said in the Bhagavad Gita, and in this way become a spiritual master and deliver everybody in this land. So in those, in the same way, just that we have no genuine, say, feeling, you know, of bhakti, and when we're chanting or maybe performing our service, in the same way we don't have any compassion, at least possibly some of you, if I don't want to offend anybody, but if anybody's already on that platform, my obeisances, but I mean, for a lot of us, we don't have the compassion, but we've been engaged in a compassionate activity. See, and because we've engaged in that compassionate activity of preaching, then it'll develop. You know, it develops in due course of time because the activity itself is purifying. Just like, you know, even if we don't have that desire to love Krishna, by chanting, it will develop. In the same way, by preaching, even if initially we're not preaching out of compassion for the fallen conditioned souls, we're just preaching because we've been told it's the order of the spiritual master and it's purifying and it's what we should be doing, and intellectually we can understand that it's what we, that's okay. Initially that's okay, because even if we do it for those reasons, then our consciousness will become purified because we are being engaged in pure devotional service, you know, by our spiritual master and the predecessor acharyas, and just by following these, engaging in these activities, following the instructions, our hearts become purified, and gradually we will come to the stage of, experiencing pure love for Krishna and compassion for the living entities who are not engaged in devotional service, just by, you know, sincerely and seriously following the process, just by plugging in and engaging. So maybe I'll stop there. I think I'm better quit while I'm ahead here. I got a few coherent thoughts together there. And such an order. Thank you.
So you have, the Vedas have, they're very compassionate, the scriptures, because they give options. Like, you quote first, Anya Vilasita Sunya Gyanam Karmana Navritan. Free from fruitive activities, no followers, no women, no money, I don't want nothing.
Well, no, I quoted Lord Chaitanya Shashastri. Yeah. That verse also is referring to, it's a definition of pure devotional service by Rupa Goswami, that one you just quoted.
And the other one is Akama Sarvokamava, Moksha Kama Udraye, Tibrena Bhakti Yogena, Jayata Purusham Param. So you have those two. And in preaching, that verse is more palatable to people. To hear when we're spreading Krishna consciousness, 99% of the people, we fall in that category also. That we actually embrace that. We say, oh, there's some hope for me. And sometimes I always even think that when we present our books and when people read our books, Prabhupada is very strong, very strong. He's actually wants the conditioned living entity to go back to Godhead. His preaching is, here's what are you doing here? You're wasting your time. Just go back to that head. So there's those two like opposites. But at the same time, being so compassionate, Krishna and God gives chance to the living entity. And sometimes we have, like in the Vedas, like the Karma Kanda section of fruitive activity, where it's an encouragement to elevate the conditioned soul. But sometimes in other sections of the same Vedas, of the books, is condemned completely. If you engage in this, it's like drinking poison. Can you talk more about that?
Yeah, well, you know, Krishna's trying to get everybody, and he can understand that not all the living entities are on the same level. They're all on different levels, so they've got something for everybody. Just like, I can't remember where I was, but I was in some situation where I was in a store, and I was working there. And I noticed how, like, you know, people want to shop. They want to buy something. But not everybody has the money to go in there and, you know, can afford to buy something that's really quality and expensive. So, you know, the people who are arranging the shop, they got all sorts of things in there. They got the good stuff and they got the cheap stuff, and at least everybody can come in and get something. So in the same way, the Vedic, you know, tradition is set up in such a way that people on all sorts of different levels can, you know, they can connect at some level and progress from there. And, you know, it's not the highest thing. That's okay. But it's a start. Something's better than nothing. You know, so that's why the, you know, even it's within the Vedic culture, people worship goddess Kali. And they offer sacrifices to goddess Kali. And they make progress by doing that, you know. Certainly it's not devotional, pure devotional service. It's far, far from pure devotional service. But it's something. They're connected in some way with, you know, with Vedic culture like that, and and you referring to Prabhupada's books, I know myself, like, take Bhagavad Gita for instance. Bhagavad Gita is pretty strong, powerful preaching, but at the same time you can find things even in Bhagavad Gita that are encouraging for the neophytes. I have, you know, and all Prabhupada's books, you can do that if you read through them. So I don't think that people get turned off, you know, that it's this is too high a standard or something like that. If they're sincere, they'll be able to appreciate that. That's something that's a level I'm not on yet. But at the same time, they'll be able to find something within Prabhupada's books that gives them hope, gives them encouragement, that they feel that they can, you know, grab onto and take shelter of. And, you know, and Krishna will give them the intelligence to understand that, okay, this is the ideal standard, and this is where I am. But, you know, not to lament, you know, not to despair, that there's hope. If I can start here, and I can, if I kind of engage in the process, if I follow this, then I can progress. And maybe, you know, sometime eventually in the future, someday, some life, whatever, I'll be able to come to that platform. So, you know, I think that, it's good. You have to present, you know, the ideal standard, and, you know, that's, you know, completely important. But I think Prabhupada presented his books, and I even think this Krishna conscious movement is presented in such a way that it's always giving hopes. You know, it always gives hope to people who are on a lower level. It's not discouraging. You know, Prabhupada knew how to preach. He knew how to do it in such a way that people could understand this is the ideal standard, and but at the same time they wouldn't feel discouraged by, you know, seeing where they fit in, and they would, you know, they would see where they could come in and begin their path back home, back to Godhead. Suvasprabhu?
John, thank you, Bhagavati Prabhu. When you were given this class, I know, wrong verse and everything, but it was very nice. I think that what it made me think about was...
Thank you. I feel... thank you.
What made me think about was how nice Prabhupada has given us this Krishna consciousness in a very... you know, he shortened everything for us. You know, like prior to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there were so many people practicing so many austerities and sacrifices and penances and still not acquiring the goal or not even understanding the goal. We were fortunate enough to run into a pure devotee of the Lord who actually just erased all that mental speculation, unnecessary tapasya for, you know, some mental platform. And just by surrendering to Prabhupada and reading his books and chanting the holy name, we can actually understand the end point of knowledge immediately. And you don't even need to have any PhD or college education. You just need to be a sincere, humble devotee. And immediately you can acquire that highest platform of life. And this is how simple Prabhupada made it. And we're at fault by making it more difficult than it really is. Just due to our mental concoctions and aspirations, if we just simply take the philosophy as it is, you know, as Prabhupada gave it to us, and just read his books and just, you don't even have to be that scholarly. You just have to accept. It's really that simple. Just accept everything you hear. And just follow the process, and you can go back home, back to Godhead. And that's almost unbelievable. When you analyze, you know, we're reading the Bhagavatam, and we just heard about Agnidra and how austere he, you know, performed his sacrifices, and how dedicated he was to it. I mean, who can be attracted to that? It just is just what a waste of a valuable time in life. Instead, if we just simply pick up a Bhagavatam or hear the Bhagavatam or chant the holy name, we can immediately go to the highest platform. And as Papa said, we can take the stairway.
Yeah.
We can take the stairway to the spiritual world. It may take you many, many births. But if you just simply hop on the elevator that Srila Prabhupada has made for us, and you just press that button, then practically you can go to the spiritual world just on that particular basis by the mercy of Prabhupada.
Yeah, Prabhupada would make that point repeatedly, actually, that, you know, that's one time he made a, I think it was in a Bhagavad Gita class, I think it was here in Los Angeles, this, a bunch of lectures titled The Yoga System. And he's saying that if you, you have to go to the top of a, like the Empire State Building, a 100-story building, you can take the elevator. If you take the stairs, you might get there, but by the time you get to the floor you need to get to, you know, the office is closed, it's the end of the day, like that. So, and, you know, a couple of verses from the Bhagavad Gita immediately spring to my mind, like, Manushyanam sahasreshu kaschit yadati siddhi, out of many thousands among men, one may endeavor for perfection. And then even of those who achieve perfection, which Prabhupada refers to as, like, you know, understanding you're not the body, hardly one knows Krishna in truth. Knows it's kind of, if you try to go by that ascending process of just kind of figuring it out, you know, by being a jnani and coming to the platform of, you know, understanding you're not the body, and then even among those, hardly one out of thousands among men does that, and then even of those who do that, hardly one knows Krishna in truth. And then there's that other verse, Bahunam Janmanam Ante Krishna, say, after many, many births, one who is in knowledge. So it's rare. We're very fortunate. We've kind of had the whole thing handed over to us on a silver platter. And as Swavas was explaining, basically we just have to accept it. There's no need for any further, you know, kind of speculation or anything. Just accept it and do it. And then that's it. So, I'll stop giving my purports and let everybody just make their comments. I mean, it's probably better. Man.
At the same time, I was just reminded that when we were in the Chicago Temple, and I've said this before, there was a letter that they blew up, you know, as big as the pictures behind Prabhupada's Vyasa-san. And it's on the temple wall in the Chicago temple, Kishore Kishori's temple, right there now. And it's a letter from Prabhupada to the temple president in Miami. And Prabhupada says in that letter that without, unless our devotees rise early, shower 10 Mangal Arti, Guru Puja class, follow the regular principles of freedom, unless they do these things, and of course chant Hare Krishna 16 rounds, Prabhupada said, unless they do these things, there's no question of spiritual life. So Prabhupada, yes, made it very simple, but at the same time, we have to become sadhakas and follow strictly that simplicity. Otherwise, what to speak, no question of spiritual life, what to speak of going to Vaikuntha? Even in this life, Prabhupada said, there's no question of spiritual life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good point. Sham Gopal.
So we mentioned, you know, the four related principles and 16 rounds and different aspects of our sadhanas being crucial for our success in spiritual life. I'm wondering about another component, our relationships with other devotees and specifically with our authorities. Can I succeed in spiritual life? Is Krishna going to be pleased with me? Is my guru going to be pleased with me if I refuse to or disregard or consider it unimportant to follow my temple president or my department head or other senior devotees?
Well, as Sri Dharmapu nicely pointed out in the class he gave a few days ago, he quoted that verse, Yasya Prashada Bhagavat Prashada, Yasya Prashada Nagati Katopi, that by the mercy of the spiritual master, one advances in Krishna consciousness, and without his mercy, Nagatith Katopi, you don't make advancement. So, and I think the point was also made that the temple authorities are representing the spiritual master. That was how Prabhupada set it up. It was Prabhupada, and then the GBC was the ultimate managerial authorities, and the GBC have their, representatives in the form of temple presidents and so forth and so on. So there's a chain of command with the ISKCON. And as was pointed out, in an ideal situation, that chain of command is representing Prabhupada, accurately. And one has to, work within that. So to answer your question, yeah, I think you have to please your spiritual master, you have to please your temple authorities. Temple authorities should be seen as representing one's spiritual master, and it's important to please your temple authorities. Prabhupada once gave the example of or maybe more than once, if you're working in a company, everybody has their immediate superior, and you have to, if you please your, it's not necessary to even, to try to, endeavor to try to please the CEO, the chief executive officer. You just please your immediate superior, and then the report will go up, 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 and, in that way you'll be pleasing the top person, the person at the top of the hierarchy there. So, yeah, that's my understanding, that you actually have to be trying to please, your authorities in order to make advancement in Krishna consciousness. It's not just something, if you can't just be mechanical, we have to actually, should have to try to be cultivating that consciousness of pleasing a personality, consciously doing our activities in a way that we're trying to please a personality, the personality that we're working under. As Judhakarma pointed out in his class, I think he was referring to a literature written by Rupa Goswami, Ujjvala and Nilamani, was it? Where it's described how even when you go back to the spiritual world, there's a leader. It's not like you directly relating to Krishna. You're in a group, and there's groups of cowherd boys, and there's groups of gopis, and you're just like a member of the group, and there's a sub-leader, there's a leader and a sub-leader, and so it's not like you're directly, relating to Radharani and Krishna. You're performing your activities under the auspices of some other devotee who's more advanced than you, and by pleasing that devotee, by pleasing the sub-leader, you're pleasing the group leader, by pleasing the group leader, you're pleasing, et cetera, then eventually you're pleasing Radharani and you're pleasing Krishna like that. So that's there even in the spiritual world, and this, I think that principle also is applicable, or is relevant here within devotional spiritual life as we're practicing here within ISKCON. Does that answer it? Other points? Anybody? Look up.
Thank you, Prabhu, for the nice presentation, and thanks to all the devotees for such a nice call. And even coming to the process of bhakti, as Swabhasprabhu mentioned, you go lifetimes. Srila Prabhupada saved us so many lifetimes of going through so many other activities before coming to this. But my question is that in the morning, we recite this verse about committing offenses to the holy name. And that it seems that even coming to the process of bhakti, coming to the process of sadhana bhakti, it says that we can chant for many lifetimes.
Yeah.
But if we're committing offenses to the holy name, offending Vaishnavas and other things like that, then we won't even obtain the goal in the process of bhakti. Can you speak on that for a little bit?
Well, I'll just make one teeny little comment. Maybe somebody else might. Yeah, it's just that. It's just what it says. You have to, we're fortunate that we've come to this, got this far, that we've, been, now we have the process of devotional service, but just like it states in that verse, if you're committing offenses, then you won't achieve the love of Godhead, which is the ultimate goal of that chanting. So we have to try to avoid committing the offenses, and we have to also try to do things that will help us become free from those offenses. It's just as it's stated. I can't think of anything much. I mean, of course, the only thing I could mention is that in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, where that verse comes from, in that same chapter, if you just go a few verses further, it explains that, but if one with some slight faith chants the names of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, he very quickly becomes freed from the interactions of his offenses, and then when he chants the holy names of the Lord, he experiences love of the ecstasy of love of Godhead. So that's there. So now, sometimes, you know, can't take things out of, not that by reciting that verse in the morning when we say the 10 offenses, we're taking it out of context, but if you go back and you read that verse in the chapter that it's found in, it, that verse I just quoted does appear a few verses on from that. So maybe the whole thing's maybe meant to be taken as a whole, that, yeah, there are offenses, you know, that we can commit while chanting the holy names, but by taking shelter of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, not just chanting their names, of course, doing that, but in addition to that, trying to, you know, really surrender to the mission that they gave for us, which is, you know, becoming Krishna, trying to become Krishna conscious ourselves and share it with other people by, you know, wholeheartedly embracing the whole process that they've given to us. In the Harinam Sankirtan movement, it's a way that we can become free from offenses, of, you know, and achieve the love of Godhead, which is the ultimate goal of the chanting. That's a thought, you know. Mr. Vasprabhu.
One needs to avoid these 10 offenses, or these offenses, in order to achieve Krishna prema. So that should be the goal. If we don't have the goal of developing Krishna prema, then we won't. In other words, what he's saying here about the offenses of the holy name, the reason we follow that is we want to acquire Krishna prema. So if a neophyte isn't understanding that, they're chanting, but they may be committing offenses, the process is still keep chanting until you finally wake up one day and you think to yourself, well, you know, I really would want to go back to Godhead. I really want to develop Krishna prema. So until we really realize what the goal is, in other words, what Sri Prabhu was saying is right. We have to actually execute. So if we want to develop Krishna prema, love of Krishna, then we'll wake up one day and we'll realize that we're committing offenses. Not that everything's automatic. You know, just because I'm initiated, I'm a, you know, a real Prabhupada disciple, but I'm not doing anything. You know, it's like I'm initiated, but I don't chant, I don't follow principles, I don't do any service, but I'm a disciple of Srila Prabhupada. Yeah, we think that's like automatic. So it's not automatic until we wake up one day that we really want to develop Krishna prema. What's the motivation for not offending the spiritual master or the Vaishnava devotees of the Lord, or following the principles or coming to the temple? You know, unless we have that goal, what's the motivation? We may think that we've already done what we can do. And that may be okay, but then that way you'll have to chant for lifetimes. Mm. So until we wake up and really understand Krishna prema or want it, what's the motivation?
Okay, I guess unless somebody's really burning to say something, we could end on that note. Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.